And away we go. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with Tom Fairbanks. Tom, tomorrow we've got Leah Marquez Peterson of the Arizona Corporation Commission. I am keeping my fingers crossed that the grid doesn't go down. I'm telling you, this is not a time we want the electrical grid to go down.
No. And, you know, if it hasn't gone down so far with the temperatures that we've had,
yeah,
I think we're doing okay.
I think we are, but we'll hear from Leah tomorrow after, this is going into the record books, the hottest July in Arizona on record. It's Wednesday the 27th. Excuse me, we're on Thursday already, aren't we? Thursday, July 27th. 2023. In January, we begin our 14th year with the radio program, and hopefully in January, it will be a lot cooler than it is. If it isn't, we've got some, it won't be global warming, it will be global boiling if that doesn't happen. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice. For news and talk, we are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. We have our worldwide live listening. You can hear the program anywhere in the world by just logging into buckmastershow.com. For our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Will Humble is one of two dozen regular contributors to this program. We are so delighted, honored to have Mr. Humble with us. He is the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. His 30 years in public health included more than two decades at the Arizona Department of Health Services, where he served in various capacities, including the agency director from 2009 to 2015. Let's go now to our conversation with Will Humble. Will, how are you?
Good afternoon. I'm doing great. How about you?
Good. Are you still up in the valley, or is it next month you're traveling to the Big Apple?
No, I'm here right now. I'm in Brooklyn right now.
Oh, yeah. What's going on back there in Brooklyn?
Well, my daughter's been living here for the last 5 years, and she's moving apartments, so I'm going to help her move this weekend and drive some of the stuff back in a van to Phoenix.
Well, I'm telling you, Will, this month, as I said in the opening remarks, will go down into the record books as the hottest, certainly in Maricopa County and here in Tucson. I've been in town 35 years. I don't know how long you've been in Arizona, but there's nothing like this if I can ever recall. What about you?
No, I mean, there's always been little like segments of 115 up in Phoenix or 717, but then, you know, the moisture would come in and, you know, the humidity would rise and then we'd get back to 108 and stuff like that again. But I've been here, I'm 60 years, you know, and part of that as a kid, of course, but there's never been a streak like this, just little, you know, parts of streaks,
yeah,
but nothing like this.
Well, how deadly is environmental heat when you stack it up against other kind of weather disasters? How big a deal is environmental heat death?
Oh, I mean, it's far and away the biggest killer of people in terms of weather phenomena. You know, lightning and hurricanes and floods get all mm-hmm. the attention, but it's generally heat that does the most damage. Globally, interestingly, it's cold kills more people. Obviously, in Arizona, that's not true. Heat is the biggest culprit, and you know, it how lethal it is depends on your exposure. I mean, this is like it's the basic. It's just like toxicology. One of the things you learn in a toxicology class is the dose makes the poison. You know,
mm-hmm.
and that's the same with the heat. The dose is what makes it dangerous. And so, if you could be somebody who's really susceptible, somebody who's 90 years old, but if you limit your exposure and just go outside to get the mail and maybe do a few errands and things like that, you're going to be fine. But if you try to do yard work, you know, and don't stay hydrated, it can be lethal really quickly. And so, you know, people with outdoor occupations are used to that, and they know they need to stay hydrated, and they start work at 5 o'clock in the morning and knock off by noon, you know. So it's all about exposure, really, and being sensible about it and staying hydrated. And then we can live with the heat.
Any data that would back up about risk factors?
Well, the main, yeah, Maricopa County did a really in-depth study of the heat-related deaths in 2022. And what they discovered is something that is not going to surprise anybody, which is the biggest risk factor by far, and it's not even close, is not having a place to live. So people experiencing homelessness are far and away the highest risk for having heat-related illnesses and, of course, deaths. And it goes to what I just said. It's exposure. Like, they're living in it all the time. And so, and it's difficult to get enough water, you know, when you're living like that. So being homeless is the far and away biggest risk factor. And the Maricopa County study bore that out.
The Arizona Department of Health Services, the organization that you were once head of, now has a new responsibility in their portfolio. The funeral industry is now part of the funeral industry licensing is now part of the portfolio.
Yeah. So for many, many years, decades, really, there's been a funeral board which regulates the funeral home industry and people and the administrators that work in that industry as a consumer protection kind of regulator. But there's been a lot of drama about that over the last few years. You know, the board has been fairly ineffective, a lot of shortcomings with that program. And really last year, the legislators just got fed up and they said, look, we're not going to run. We're going to let this agency sunset, this funeral board sunset, which means it's just going to go away. And so obviously you can't be in that situation and just have it sort of be unregulated for lots of reasons. And so this March, this last year during the legislative session a few months ago, the legislature passed a bill that basically moved that funeral home board under the state health department, I think hoping that having some better infrastructure and better leadership will improve the effectiveness of what the board is charged with in terms of regulating, funeral homes, crematoriums, and the people and the leadership that works in those industries.
So
that's been moved over. It got moved over, I think, this week.
So there was a board that regulated this before?
Yeah. So actually, this is it'd be an interesting topic for another show later on about the importance of boards and commissions. I mean, you know, we hear a lot about the state Medicaid agency, Access, and Department of Economic Security, Department of Corrections, Department of Health Services, water department. We hear a lot about those agencies, but there's a lot of what happens in state government is regulated by these different boards and commissions, like, you know, regulating doctors. There's a medical board, regulating dentists, dental board. There's actually 200 of them. And the funeral board was always one of those, but it got off the rails, and I think the legislature just said, enough's enough. We've got to make this a more professional operation, and hopefully this move will give them more infrastructure and accountability. We'll see.
You know, you said there are about 200 boards. If someone had some time on their hands and they wanted to kind of get involved with something, maybe look at an area of interest, I guess they'd be almost welcomed on a board, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I've done a bunch of blog posts about this recently. So if you go to my blog, Will's blog, azpha.org, and Google Boards and Commissions, I've got a link to where you can volunteer your time on a board or commission. You're not going to get rich from it. So I'll just tell everybody who's thinking about it, this is a labor of love. This isn't something that you're going to make a lot of money at, but that we desperately need people with expertise who don't have conflicts of interest to pay attention to some of these issues, everything from, you know, Arts Commission to the Arizona-Mexico Commission to the medical boards to what I'm talking about here, the funeral board. So, yeah, it's a great way to get involved if you want to, you know, let's say you're retired or you're looking for, you know, something extra to do besides your job. It's a great way to volunteer your time and help out your fellow citizens. And you can volunteer on the governor's website at the boards and commissions. More, you could check it out on my blog, like I just said.
All right. When we continue with Will Humble, let's take a little deeper dive into the latest on the what is the origin of the SARS-CoV-19 virus. We'll talk with Will about that, the latest thinking on that. It's Buckmaster on a Thursday. Be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Thursday edition. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studios. Green Things imports their Talavera pottery directly from Mexico to bring you Tucson's largest collection of sizes, shapes, styles, all at great prices. Green Things and their sister business Zocalo Village, located at 3384 East River Road. Here are a couple of websites for you. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. They are open daily in their 53rd year of business. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Will Humble is the former director of the Arizona Health Department. He is our contributor on public health, and he is currently the executive director. He is the director of marketing and public relations and executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. So on and on the debate goes, Will. Did the COVID-19 virus have a natural or laboratory origin?
It depends on who you ask. So the Congress passed a law called the COVID-19 Origin Act last year. And this law ordered the U.S. intelligence community to declassify all the information that they have regarding, you know, potential leaks between the Wuhan Institute of Virology and the COVID-19 virus pandemic. And so, and they published it. I found the document, put it up on my blog last week. So here's what the different agencies say. The FBI believes that the SARS-CoV-2 virus that causes COVID-19 was leaked from that laboratory. That the FBI is convinced of that. There's another group of agencies in the National Intelligence Council, which and four different other agencies, they believe it was most likely caused by natural exposure to an infected animal. So like a wet market kind of leak from a bat or something like that. The CIA says they didn't have enough information to determine what they think the origin was. So there's not a consensus among the intelligence agencies what the origin of the virus is. Now there's been different, published, peer-reviewed journal articles about, this question. None of those articles have been conclusive about what the origin of the virus is. And quite honestly, we'll probably never know. Huh. In large part because the Chinese government is not cooperating and not allowing, researchers to access the documents that they need to access about the Wuhan Institute of Virology and associated documents and do the inspections that they need to do and get the forensic data. They're just not cooperating. So unless that changes, I don't think we're ever going to really know for sure.
What's your take on the Alzheimer's drug that's being talked about so much? They've started now. It is available. Do you have a take on that, Will?
Yeah, so there's two different drugs that are out there now. The first one is named Aduhelm, and that was approved by the FDA last year, even though FDA's advisory committee unanimously voted not to approve the drug, because it's ineffective. And yet, the FDA commissioner approved it anyway. Her name's Woodcock. And so now that drug named Aduhelm is available, but Medicare isn't paying for it unless you're part of a clinical trial because I agree with that because, the experts said it wasn't effective and yet it was approved anyway. And here's the rub, Bill. The medication costs $26,000 a year. Which is enough to really blow a hole in the Medicare budget.
Wow.
For a drug that the advisory committee said doesn't work.
Oh, man.
And it's outrageous, in my opinion. That's the one drug. There's another drug called, there was just a lecanemab, something like that, that was just approved recently by FDA. It's a different kind of medication. It's a monoclonal antibody treatment. So it's not a pill that you take, but it would be like an IV that you would periodically get. And that drug, these antibodies were shown to shrink the plaques inside the brain that are associated, not, we don't know if it causes, but are associated with the dementia, from Alzheimer's, and it in some people early on slightly slows the progression of the disease. So this isn't a cure, and for many people it doesn't even slow it down. For some people it does slow it down a little bit, but same deal. It's the price. It's $26,000, a year. For a drug, for the infusion, these are monoclonal antibodies that is of questionable efficacy. So, but that one has been approved, and Medicare says they will begin to pay for it. And quite honestly, this is gonna cost the Medicare fund, which all of you listeners out there are paying into through your payroll taxes, a lot of money, billions and billions of dollars, for pretty questionable medical benefit. So you asked me what I think. I told you what I think. you know, this isn't a bottomless pit of money, and it doesn't make sense to spend a whole lot of money on things that are of really questionable efficacy, especially at that price point. And, you know, we heard so much about the Inflation Reduction Act giving Medicare the opportunity to, you know, negotiate drug prices. Well, guess what? These are exempt because you can't negotiate the price until they've been out on the market 13 years. So it's not like they can negotiate the price of these things. And that's why I was never an evangelist for, you know, going, oh, what a great thing the Inflation Reduction Act is going to lower drug prices. You never heard me say that because it got watered down so much. And it's not a bad thing what happened, but it could have been a lot more. It just got watered down in the Senate by one of our senators, Senator Sinema. She had a big hand in changing what could have been a really good negotiating tool.
Well, can pharmacists in the state of Arizona dispense certain drugs without a physician's prescription?
Yeah. Are you talking about the contraceptives, right?
Yeah.
So, this is a new thing that happened since we talked last month. There's oral contraceptives that have been on the market for a long time, but have required a physician prescription for women to get access to those oral contraceptives. A bill was passed last year that allowed that to happen without a physician prescription, but it required the state health department to, you know, and the Board of Pharmacy to get together to come up for a process for that. And they did that in the last month. So now women can go and get oral contraceptives at their local pharmacy without a prescription. They do have to fill out a questionnaire that the pharmacist will ask them to fill out. But that's a big change that'll make it a lot more convenient for some people.
Is this the first time that the first product that a physician that you know of, a physician with a pharmacist can dispense with something without a physician prescription?
No, pharmacists can do vaccines, for example, is a big category.
Oh, yeah.
Where pharmacists
okay.
can. So you could just show up without a prescription for a vaccine and they could administer it to certain populations. There, you know, there's limitations on that. So, and there are other standing orders that we've used over the years, you know, for different kinds of, you know, medical conditions, but it's not like something that you do all the time. It's what the standing order is, you know, says, look, I'm the state health department chief medical officer, and I'm issuing the prescription, and anyone can use this prescription under certain categories. And that's what happened with this contraceptive drug last month.
What about there's been a lot of talk that schools, due to financial considerations, have had to cut back on behavioral health and other services. Are we starting to see a turnaround in the state of Arizona with some new opportunities for schools to provide those services, Will Humble?
Yeah, so there are a lot more opportunities than I think some school districts realize to tap into access funding, that's Medicaid funding, through our access agency to provide different kinds of a whole bunch of services to their students that are Medicaid members. And more than half of Arizona kids are actually enrolled in Medicaid. That's their health insurance. And so not that many school districts are really participating to the extent that they could to tap into those Medicaid funds to provide services to their students. And there's the state Medicaid agency has a list of about 10 different categories where schools can provide those services and then build access and get reimbursed for those services. But the real important one, I think, is especially post-pandemic, and not just post-pandemic, but is with behavioral health services. You know, so many of our students have had experiences in their past that have been traumatic and could use, you know, psychology, counseling and help, other kinds of behavioral services. And school districts, I've been trying to encourage them and get the word out that, you know, they could set up some programming to start providing more of those services than they are right now and get paid for it through the state Medicaid agency access.
Whatever happened with a new health director in the state of Arizona, do we now have one?
We still have an interim, a temporary, I think, interim. Her name's Jenny Cunico. She's, as you remember, Dr. Cullen was nominated sure. by the governor and then turned down by the Senate. She was supremely qualified, I thought.
Yep.
Dr. Cullen was, and she would have been a great health director. But we still have a placeholder, as far as I know. I know the governor hasn't named this person, you know, as, you know, I'm nominating this person. It's still an interim, and that's her name, Jenny Cunico. You know, she's not like she's out there, and you could probably Google her and not find much in terms of talking to journalists or anything. So,
she's below the radar. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. She's below the radar. And so I don't know. I don't know if they're still interviewing people or what. I'm not inside the tent.
All right. Will Humble, always a pleasure. We'll look forward to your visit with us in August. And how's the weather in Brooklyn? Pretty good?
Yeah. Well, compared to Phoenix, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Have a safe trip back, Will. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
All right. Travel Talk with Ryan Hansen's coming up. It's Buckmaster Midway Point of our program on Thursday afternoon. We'll be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Time for our insider travel talk on the Buckmaster Show with our travel contributor, Mr. Ryan Hansen, President and Chief Operating Officer of Bon Voyage Travel, Arizona's premier travel agency since 1976. The Bon Voyage travel experts are standing by now to create your trip of a lifetime. There are three Southern Arizona Bon Voyage offices, River and Campbell, Green Valley and Oro Valley, bvtravel.com. Your first stop in making your travel dreams come true. And Ryan Hansen's travel dreams came true just very recently with a wonderful trip to Scotland. Welcome home, Rhino.
It's good to be back, but I'll tell you, I would have been better if I could have been on location. I prefer that, but I'm just recently back. Got back on Tuesday evening from a great, great experience.
Tell me about the experience.
Okay, so it was a cruise, and we embarked in Copenhagen, but it really wasn't about Copenhagen. It was more about immersing ourselves in everything you can think about in Scotland and ending in Dublin. It was a 14-night cruise aboard the Azamara Pursuit. And that might be a cruise line that some of the listeners are not familiar with. Azamara Cruises is a smaller ship cruise line. They have four ships that they operate, and the capacity is only 690 passengers, Bill. So it was a very intimate experience, which we loved. And the reason we loved it is because we were able to get into ports of call that many of the big ships just don't even call on. Of course, we had the main stops in Edinburgh and the port that calls on Glasgow, and we went to Belfast and ended in Dublin. But because of the size of the ship, we were able to sneak into small places like Stornoway, Scotland, and we went up to the Shetland Islands. And really had an experience that those big ships cannot provide because they just don't even go there. So it was very immersive. I'm surprised I didn't come back with an accent, but I can tell you this, Bill, if you have ever been to Scotland and Ireland, they are extremely friendly and welcoming to visitors.
Yeah, I've always had a great experience. We had a great trip to Scotland and to Ireland. And the Shetland Islands, that must have been fascinating. The wildlife, I saw some of your pictures posted on Facebook. That looked like fun.
An absolute treat for us. We traveled with our two children, which I have to say they're blessed because of my job in the travel industry. This was, I believe, Scotland and Ireland added countries number 17 and 18 to their list, and they are 14 and 17 years old, so they're doing pretty well. They're on their way to Bill Buckmaster territory of 100-plus countries visited, but one of the special unique stops was the Shetland Islands, and quite a bit north of Scotland. Took us an overnight cruise port of call to get from Aberdeen up to the Shetland Islands, and pretty amazing facts about the Shetland Islands. There aren't any trees. No trees grow naturally on the Shetland Islands, so it is a very unique topography. You can see as far as your eye can see, and with beautiful beaches, wonderful weather in the month of July. Probably not a place you want to visit in the months of December and January, but we were there just this last couple weeks, and our stop included a visit to a Shetland pony experience. That was an hour and a half opportunity for us to get up close and personal to a horde of Shetland ponies. We're able to groom them. They showed us how their riding school that they train young people to ride these ponies, and we even got to walk them down to a beach and down along the beach. We're too big to ride the Shetland ponies, but boy, our kids loved it. They're animal lovers. Was really kind of a unique experience that I would recommend to anyone visiting the islands.
Ryan Hansen, I want to talk a little bit about that particular category of cruisings. Let's say under 1,000 passengers aboard. Is that a growing sector of the industry?
It absolutely is. I'm glad you pointed that out. A lot of the news in cruising are bigger is better. I'm sure many people are familiar with the Royal Caribbean ships, and they're coming out with a new ship called the Icon of the Seas. And it is 6,000 passengers.
Oh,
6,000 passengers.
No.
And we were just on a ship that was 600 passengers. Some of the major differences. And it depends on what you're looking for. Maybe you want a floating city that has 20-plus restaurants, has roller coasters and water parks on top of it. That's the big ships. The ship we were on has four dining venues, only, like I said, just a shade over 600 passengers. So the ports of call that we were able to go into, getting on and off the ship, bill on the 14-night cruise was a breeze.
Yeah.
There was hardly anybody there. And when we stepped off ship in many of the places, it didn't feel touristy to us. It wasn't overrun by people just coming off the gangway by the thousands. It was just small groups coming off the gangway, and we spilled into these tiny little towns, felt the local spirit of the town. We were able to go into restaurants and not feel like there is an invasion of tourists coming in with the big ships. So I very much prefer this smaller experience, and it doesn't feel like the word that you and I have talked about recently, which is over-tourism.
Yeah.
A lot of people traveling, and sometimes when you get to those big ships, yes, you may have a few more amenities, a few more quote-unquote bells and whistles, but there are cons to that, and some of the cons are just the crowds, and I'm not a big crowd guy anymore.
No, me either. So what about price point? Are you going to pay a premium for a smaller cruise, or not necessarily, Ryan?
In some cases, depends on how luxurious you want to get and what inclusions you want in your experience. Some of the smaller ships do come with an all-inclusive feel, meaning they have wine and beer and spirits pouring throughout the day. You can just get those for free. That would be an all-inclusive experience. That's going to cost you a little bit more. Also, the inclusive nature of the shore excursions. If you're looking for some of the smaller ships do provide an all-inclusive experience with shore excursions, complimentary. Just take your pick and they will escort you off the ship. And that is part of cruising, right? What are you going to do when you're on land, like we talked about the Shetland Pony experience? The Azamara cruise that I was just on was kind of a combination, somewhere in the middle, Bill, where wine, beer, and spirits and all your specialty coffees, that was available throughout the day. But it wasn't all top shelf. Mm-hmm. So if you are someone that has a real specific taste and you enjoy a finer spirit or a more expensive wine, you would be paying a slight upcharge for that. But if you just like a nice glass of wine with dinner, that's going to be included in your cruise fare. So it is a reasonable price from that standpoint. But it also allows us that middle of the road. Which shore excursions do we want to choose? You pay as you go on Azamara, so they're a la carte expenses for your shore excursions. And in some of the cities, we chose to do a shore excursion with Azamara. Like we cruised Loch Ness, and we tried to find Nessie, but we could not find the Loch Ness monster to save our life. I thought this was going to be the trip. I'm of course, joking about that, but we did cruise on Loch Ness. That was a wonderfully escorted excursion by Azamara, but a number of the other cities we chose to take on the city on our own, like Edinburgh. We just took an Uber right into town, 10-minute Uber ride, and we were strolling up and down the Royal Mile from the cathedral all the way up to the castle at the top of Edinburgh. It was kind of a perfect mix for us, where you get to have some inclusions, but then you can make the trip your own.
Caller Greg has a question about cruising for Ryan Hansen. Let's go ahead with Greg. Go ahead, Greg.
Hey, thanks very much. First off, I think I spotted I was at Patagonia Lake fishing, and I'm pretty sure it did the monster. But hey, Ryan, here's the thing. I cruised with the one time it was a Russian cruise ship, the Mikhail Lermontov, which the Australians had chartered to do an around the world thing. I just got on in Hawaii and got to San Francisco. But then I've also booked passage on a freighter. Now, if I get in touch with you at your office, is that kind of cabin still available if I wanted to get on a freighter? And, you know, they have like 10 or 12 spots for folks like myself.
Interesting question, Greg. Thank you.
That's a great question. Unfortunately, Greg, not the style of travel that our advisors are specialized in, where a freighter is going to be a little more Spartan accommodations and from a food and an inclusion and a true vacation experience. We deal with a little bit more inclusive nature when it comes to amenities and off-ship experiences. So if you wanted to elevate your experience slightly, that's what we could help you with. We're not really specialized in barges on the river or freighters on the ocean. But if you want to give our office a call, we can maybe set you up with an advisor and can at least talk through and see what your options are.
There is a cruise in Tahiti that does service the outer islands, Ryan. It goes out of Papeete And it's not the Gauguin cruise, which is the really kind of a higher end one, but they actually service the outer islands, and they do. I think they've got about 100. I think they may have 40 or 50 cabins on that one. So that might be something that Greg
could be an option for Greg
want to look into. But that's a good question. I had not thought about freighter travel. Quickly, before we take the break, Ryan, what are you hearing about this more paperwork for Europe? Digital, you're going to have basically kind of a digital visa?
Yes. The European Union next year, so not something to worry about this year at all. So if you're traveling to Europe, no fear. Don't have to worry about the European visa that's coming into effect next year. They are going to make it electronic. It's going to be very simple and very nominal. I believe it's going to be in the single digits, $7, $8, $10. So it's not going to be something that's going to be in a cost prohibitive for a traveler going to Europe, but it is one more step, which is exactly, and Bill, this is our shameless plug of the night, of the day here, is to let you know that's why you book with a travel advisor and you call us and we know all of those ins and outs. And it's just one more step. It's not cost prohibitive. It's going to be digital, so it's going to be fairly easy, but you want to make sure you get that done before you travel next year to Europe.
And a quick note about, I looked this up very quickly. There is, it's called the Aruna, A-R-A-N-U-I, 5, deluxe freight cruise in Tahiti. And they go out to the Marquesi Islands, and they stop along the way, unload freight, but they also take on passengers. So, Greg, that might be something you might want to check out.
I love having a caller, Bill. We love the engagement. That's great that Greg
called. We do. We're going to take a break right here. More with Ryan Hansen, Travel Talk, right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Be a great time to get away to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, as our temperatures continue to set records. Not believing what I'm seeing up on the screen there, Tom. Upper 80s in the coming days in Silver City, and I like that low. Lower 60s. Almost a hint of fall in the air. No, not quite, but it is going to be a lot cooler, so it's worth the three-hour drive over to Silver City. Their website, southwestnewmexico.org, a great place to start your planning before you take that trip. We are talking travel. It's Travel Talk, our monthly Travel Talk segment presented by Bon Voyage Travel, and Ryan Hansen of Bon Voyage Travel is our travel contributor to the Buckmaster Show. So, Ryan, everybody's heard about all the flight delays and cancellations. This has caught the attention of the U.S. Secretary of Transportation, Transportation Secretary Buttigieg, and his office. They are calling it unrealistic scheduling, and they're referring to some of the practices that misrepresent the air carrier's ability to actually service the tickets it's selling to consumers. Some of your thoughts, Rhino.
Well, first of all, I am very appreciative that Secretary Buttigieg is looking at this, and I like the wording that you said there, and that's the exact wording we've been seeing. There's an investigation, and it needs to happen. Consumers, travelers, I just experienced traveling internationally, and I had three flights over to Europe, two flights back. I'm proud to say I was one of the blessed. I had five on-time flights.
Are you kidding?
Five flights that departed and arrived when they were scheduled and were supposed to be scheduled, and all of our bags made it there and back on time with us.
Wow.
We're in the rarity, right? That's a unique situation than what we're seeing this summer, and so I'm glad that the government and specifically the transportation secretary is looking at it from an investigation standpoint to see what are the airlines doing? Are they setting themselves up for failure? And when we saw it this summer, just a few short weeks ago, from June 24th to June 27th, one-third of all domestic U.S. flights were delayed. One-third, Bill, that's unbelievable.
It really is.
For something that is regulated with the FAA at this level, the government has to get involved. And what they're recognizing and seeing is, what are airlines doing based on their problems? Is it the problems that Southwest had with their meltdown of the computer system and the weather malfunction and the software issues? That's an isolated incident, but boy, was that problematic for many, many travelers. The other large-scale issue that the airlines keep fighting, and we've talked about this, but I've seen numbers, and I thought I would share some staggering numbers with you. The shortages of staffing across the board that the airline industry is seeing, from air traffic controllers, they're going to be short 3,000 air traffic controllers in the next year or so.
Oh my.
Pilots. It's going to be an unbelievable exodus here. As commercial pilots, you may not know this, they're legally required to retire at the age of 65.
Yeah.
And if you just think back to someone who's getting ready to turn 65, right, we're baby boomer-esque folks here, so that's a large swath of people. They're going to be short about 12,000 pilots from what they would expect to be. That causes challenges for the airlines. Can they schedule and keep up with the demand? The demand is huge. Something you and I don't think about, oh, of course, we need air traffic controllers. We need pilots. Let's not forget the aircraft mechanics. We're going to be short, as a nation, close to 18,000 mechanics in the next coming years. So there's a significant push for education, for opportunities in this field and this industry, for folks looking for maybe a career change or a new career to launch themselves in an aviation career that can help us get back on track as a nation. But this is looking to be, because it takes so long, Bill, to learn this craft, to become a pilot, to get licensed for all the safety regulations, it takes so long, they're saying this could be a 10-year problem that the United States is undergoing.
Well, think about it. You know, you've got a delay going on. You have an equipment issue. And then the airline, say you're at a big hub and everybody's busy and mechanical, they're all, you know, you don't have enough people, that flight is going to be delayed considerably or perhaps even scrubbed altogether. So it is a serious issue that's facing the airline industry. Getting back to what they're calling unrealistic scheduling, they may need to take a look at connection times. That needs a real revision, Ryan Hansen, because so many, as you hear it all the time, travelers missing connections.
Yeah, and a legal connection in regards to what should you be able to book. Now, if you book the segments independent of each other, you can get around this, but the legal connection time is 45 minutes. But you and I both know, I just traveled through Chicago O'Hare. It can take you 30 minutes to get from one terminal to another. That's if you're on time and they close the doors 10 to 15 minutes prior to departure. We've just missed our flight and we were on time. Let alone if you're traveling internationally through a hub like Heathrow, which is very challenging. Our recommendations is, albeit when you go to book your flight, you probably want the fastest and the cheapest, right? That's what most people are searching for. But I would recommend giving yourself an hour and a half of a layover to prepare for these challenges. You've got to be prepared, knowing right now that this is a 10-year problem. Hey, in the foreseeable future, give yourself the added extra time at the airport. It will be very much worth it to you when you make that connection on a delayed flight.
The Transportation Department has finalized a regulation that will be taking effect down the road. This rule that's finalized is for wheelchair-accessible airplane bathrooms. What's the latest on that, Rhino?
Just a great thing in the air industry is that the Transportation Department has looked at accessibility across the board. And of course, there's restrictions and confinements when you're talking about a plane. How big can you make the aisles? How can you accommodate those that have the need for a wheelchair or assistance? The big move, and it's going to take a while, is that lavatories will be required in new aircrafts that are built big enough to accommodate a personal assistant or a wheelchair passenger. So it's an amazing improvement, long, long overdue, but again, another one that when you think about how long it takes to build an aircraft and air carriers are booking and looking for delivery of aircraft up to 10 years from now. So this is not a solution to a problem that we're going to see very soon, but you have to start somewhere. They had to make this rule and put this in place. And again, the Department of Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, we're giving him a lot of airtime today, but let's give him, he's had some challenges, but let's give him some credit for pushing this through. So in his words, those that are traveling in wheelchairs are afforded the same access and dignity as the rest of the traveling public. That's a quote of his. I just thought that was beautifully stated. I thought it was important for us to shed light on something good that's happening in the air industry, that they're recognizing this is important for people down the road.
All right, Ryan Hansen, I'm so glad you and your family had a lovely experience in Scotland and in Dublin. All the best to you. Welcome home. And I want to tell people about bvtravel.com. Really is the place to go. Great website. Make those travel dreams come true. Great to have you back, Ryan.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate being on.
All right. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Ryan Hansen and Tom Fairbanks, Tom engineering and producing our program on the other side of the glass, hope everybody stays well. Has a great afternoon.